Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. My guest this week is Nick Burgin. He's president of Assai Europe. Assai are a pharmaceutical company that have developed and trialled a drug to help with Alzheimer's disease. It works on plaques that accumulate between nerve cells in the brain.
And it's believed that these plaques are the cause of the decline in cognition, so memory loss, function, the ability to function in a normal way, etc. So this drug dissolves those plaques, which then helps to slow the progression of the disease. It doesn't cure it. It's not suitable for everybody.
We chat about how it works, the drug development process, and the cost of development.
But it is billions of dollars. The clinical trial itself was hugely expensive in phase 3 with 1,800 patients, but it's not just the cost of developing the successful drug, it's the numerous failures you have as well along the line where all that investment is lost.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you.
This show is cool.
My first question to Nick is, what is the drug and where are you in the process of getting it available to people?
Yeah, that's a great place to start, Mike. So Leqembi is a drug that slows the progression of Alzheimer's disease. It does this by dissolving plaques in the brain that are common with patients with Alzheimer's disease. And it's believed that these plaques are the cause of the decline in cognition, so memory loss, function, the ability to function in a normal way, etc. So this drug dissolves those plaques, which then helps to slow the progression of the disease. It doesn't cure it. It's not suitable for everybody, but it's the first innovation for many years. Lots of companies have failed in clinical trials to find a drug that actually modifies this terrible disease. So it was a breakthrough. It was approved in the UK by the MHRA last August 23. But the barrier to access on the NHS is because we haven't got recommendation from NICE yet. Mm-hmm. But we're working hard to try and achieve that. And then it will be available for everybody on the NHS. That is everybody that where it's appropriate, I should say.
All right. So that this is the last part of the process to get approval by NICE. But can you maybe go through the whole process? Because presumably, you know, you've been working on this for a long time. You know, the initial discovery or research was probably quite a while ago. So can you take us sort of through the whole process?
Yeah, of course. Although it was a process over about 20 years, so this could be a very long show, of course. But
potted version will be fine, Nick.
So a biotech company actually based in Sweden, first of all, worked on this, developing and creating this new product. And they did it off some incredible research from Professor Hardy, who's based in the UK, who first of all identified that these amyloid plaques were a cause of the decline in Alzheimer's disease. And ASI teamed up with this biotech company called BioArctic in Sweden, and then jointly developed the product, finally managed to conduct this huge trial called Clarity, where a benefit was able to be shown that it did actually slow the decline in people's memory, cognition, etc. So,
okay, so the trial process, there are different phases of the trial process. Is kind of what, first off, where you do it on a few people, but it sounds like you've done it on a big, say massive. How many people were involved?
It was about 1,800 patients. So it was a big phase three study. It's probably one of the biggest of its type, to be honest.
Okay. And how did that work? Because when you do a trial, you've got to compare it to something. So presumably you compared it to what's currently in use and is the best thing that's currently in use.
Absolutely. So we had to do two things. We had to create a scale of cognition for Alzheimer's disease patients, which we did with the regulatory bodies, the key regulatory bodies globally. So, for example, FDA, the European Medicines Agency, the MHRA. So we worked up a very complex scale, which shows how a patient functions with Alzheimer's disease, and it can over time show how that patient declines in their basic functions. So,
I mean, that sounds quite a difficult thing to do in itself, because people talk about Alzheimer's disease, you know, some people have good days and bad days and it comes and goes, and, you know, it's not a straight line of decline, is it? I can imagine measuring that is not easy.
No, it's not. And this is part of the problem with the approval process, because it's a bit subjective. It's not like a cancer product where, you know, the tumor either shrinks and you can see it on a scan, or it disappears, hopefully, and somebody lives longer. So there's a hard endpoint there that you can measure. This is more challenging, obviously, but it's a challenging disease, Mike. It's certainly not straightforward, which is why this innovation is so crucial for patients. You're right. We compared it. I mean, the technical term, of course, is placebo, but the placebo group was patients on standard of care. So, you know, patients with Alzheimer's disease today, they're not just, well, some of them, if they're lucky, are not just left to their own devices to decline. They do get help and support. There are an old range of drugs, and in fact, ASI developed and launched the first of those drugs called acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, and the first drug was donepezil, which we launched. But it only controls, or it only helps with the symptoms of the disease. It doesn't actually slow the progression of the disease. So patients would have been on these drugs plus standard of care versus patients that had our drug.
Okay. So presumably the results of that were positive.
Yeah.
Can you say how positive, how much better was your drug compared to the previous ones?
Yeah. So it, the previous ones can't show. Well, there is some dispute, but they don't really show a reduction in the decline, whereas Leqembi showed a 23% reduction in decline for patients on the active treatment versus placebo.
Okay, so it seems like it's worth doing, you know. 23% is going to be worth having.
Absolutely. I think, Mike, the way I would put it is, you know, it's the first innovation, and the first innovation in the treatment of a challenging disease is the most important. Because what happens is then follow-up treatments come in. Other companies are encouraged to research and develop in the area. So other treatments come. And then they are either added to the first treatment, or they're added, or they supersede the first treatment because they have either better efficacy or safety. And we ourselves have in development another drug that would be added to this one, which would hopefully improve the effect overall. And the example I like to use is perhaps HIV, where the first drug didn't cure patients. It didn't really have that much impact. But of course, then other HIV drugs did come along. They were added to the first, and due to a cocktail of drugs, AIDS now is a chronic disease. It's patients don't pass it on. They can live normal lives, and that is our hope for patients in Alzheimer's.
Good help. Right, let me ask you a question, which is probably very unfair, but I'll ask it anyway. The development of this drug has been going on for 20 or so years. You'll getting to the point where it might be given to the public, members of the public. How much did all this cost? Has anyone got any idea?
Billions of dollars, mate. I don't have an exact figure, and it's, you know, lots of people ask pharmaceutical companies, well, how much does it really cost to develop a drug? But it is billions of dollars. The clinical trial itself was hugely expensive in phase three with 1,800 patients. But it's not just, is it, the cost of developing the successful drug. It's the numerous failures you have as well along the line where all that investment is lost. And we ourselves had another drug for Alzheimer's disease, which was an oral drug, also dissolved these amyloid plaques in the brain, but unfortunately it didn't show the outcomes that we needed to submit for approval. And this is pharmaceutical life. This is how it works. So it's been hugely expensive.
Is there an average for the number of drugs that get as far as the one we're talking about? How many don't? 1 to 10, 1 to 20, or, you know?
Well, I would say, if you're talking specifically about Alzheimer's disease, there's been two that have shown a benefit. And I don't know the exact number, but there must have been 10 or 15 that have failed, that got as far as phase three, which is quite far into the development program. So it's a really challenging area.
Okay, so you've got this far, and you've described to me, you know, what you've done, the kind of benefits that it has. Presumably, you've sat down and had this chat with NICE. What do they want to know, and what do you tell them?
Well, the challenges with NICE, so I'm sure you and your listeners know that NICE looks to try to assess whether a new product or indication adds benefit to patients and is a good use of taxpayers' money, and it uses a cost-effectiveness approach to do that. The challenge in this instance for our medicine is that, first of all, as with any new product, there is uncertainty in the data. You know, the clinical trial lasted 18 months. It can't go on for years. If it went on for years, it would never be available. But of course, you then have uncertainty around how long the benefits last. You can determine the benefits quite clearly from 18 months, but how long would it then go on in the future? And how long would a patient need to stay on treatment before they progressed to the stage they couldn't any longer take it? And then there's the cost of the drug. And then there is the cost of the NHS resources that would be needed to be able to diagnose and treat the patients. And this is
I guess there's also the cost of not using the drug, you know, if it does improve people.
Yeah, but NICE doesn't really take account of other costs, like the loss of productivity to the economy. It doesn't take account of the cost of carers who have to stop working to look after their husband, wife, father, mother. And it doesn't take account particularly of the impact on them, because that's not how the NICE process works. So you're right, there are huge benefits that would come from access to this medicine, because patients would be delayed going into nursing homes. We all know the challenges in social care, don't we? And how much it costs individual families if they can't get help from the state, etc. And even if they do get help from the state has to pay. So yeah, it's quite difficult. But you know, my perspective on this is the NHS does need to step up its capacity to support and help patients with Alzheimer's disease, because the UK has stated it wants to be a leader in dementia, but it's not actually doing that yet. And now that we have two drugs that actually can help patients, can improve their lives, then this is a great opportunity to invest in the NHS and these resources to diagnose and treat the patients. But you've got to be flexible about how much you say that costs, and is it reasonable to charge all of that cost against the benefit of the medicine? So, you know, we'll be incredibly flexible on price as much as we can be, but the NHS needs to be flexible on its costs for supporting the patients, and they need to build it, because going back to my point before about, well, other drugs can come along. We can turn this disease eventually into a chronic disease or even cure it. But you can't do that unless you start to build the capacity to start treating patients. So this is a great opportunity. Now we've actually got something that the doctors can use to actually start that process.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So is that part of the decision-making process, part of the information that NICE uses in the decision-making process, do you think? Is it clear what they're after, or is it a little opaque?
Is it clear or what, sorry?
Is it clear what, you know, how NICE judges?
It is clear. Let me give you an example. So you have to deliver this medicine through an IV infusion, which lasts about an hour, and you do it twice a month. And NICE has insisted that, the NHS has told NICE it has to use a cost of about £450 per infusion. Okay? Now, let me just give you a comparison. We believe that it's half of that, by the way. But let me give you an example. So in the US, which we all know is an incredibly expensive market, the cost of the same procedure varies at the low end, $65.
I think you've got NICE on the phone, Nick.
Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry, it's messages coming through. I think you're right. It's NICE saying, please don't say these things. I'll tell it there. So, and then Japan is $9 to $12. So how can it be it's £432 that NICE, ENHS now is saying each infusion would cost. So
okay.
it's much higher than in other countries. So, you know, we just ask that they be more reasonable and flexible so that we can demonstrate the drug is a good use of NHS resources.
No, okay, so, I mean, I can see that this is a complex decision-making process for sure. And, you know, just to say, there's no one, I haven't chatted from anyone from NICE to sort of get, if you like, the other side of the story. But you know, these discussions are going on. And, you know, in a civilized world, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, even NICE so what NICE have done is they've taken the unusual step of having a third appraisal committee meeting. So the process isn't finished. After their second appraisal committee meeting, unfortunately, they didn't recommend the medicine for use on the NHS, but they do want to consult again before they make a final decision, which is great news for patients and carers. Yeah. So, you know, we hope we can convince them.
Okay. Are you allowed, how does it work? If NICE, put NICE to one side, can you sell the drug in the private market?
Yes, and it is.
Okay, so it is available to patients at the moment privately?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Now, let's just go back to, you mentioned a little bit at the start, so let's kind of park the idea of, you know, when or if it's going to be used with the NHS. You mentioned a little bit about how the drug actually works. Now, I'm not a scientist or a medic, but perhaps you could just talk a little bit in terms of the layman about how it works. You mentioned it dissolves plaque in the brain. Can you give us a little bit more info? You know, where is this plaque? What is the plaque and how do we get rid of it?
So the plaque is a sort of series of protein chains that start to get in. Oh, sorry, it's still going on. They start to infiltrate into the brain, and these plaques. I mean, you could say they're something similar to the plaques that, you know, you get on an artery around the heart that leads to a heart attack.
But okay,
and of course these plaques then destroy the brain cells within the brain. So when they're dissolved, then the disease doesn't progress as quickly as if they would just kept forming. Now, what we don't know, and nobody does, is what actually causes these plaques to form in the first place. People believe it's a number of things. It could be partly hereditary, it could be lifestyle, it could be, you know, drinking, smoking, high blood pressure, etc. But we don't actually know that, and maybe when we do, we could actually cure the disease. But I suspect it's a whole host of factors that causes it. And as I said, it's partly lifestyle and other factors as well.
And another thing you alluded to, so this drug, this helps to slow down the disease.
Yeah.
It's not a cure. It doesn't reverse things.
No, unfortunately not.
Okay, it slows things down. Okay, and you mentioned how you take the drug. You take it with an injection that takes quite a few minutes, twice a month.
Yeah.
Is that forever? You know, once you start on this course, that's a forever drug, or you just take it for a few months, a year or two?
So the drug is indicated for the very early stages of Alzheimer's disease, which are called mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. And it can be taken at that stage of the disease and then through the mild stage of the disease. But it can't be taken when a patient has progressed to the moderate stage of the disease. Okay. After moderate, it's severe, and that's when patients often have to be, have to go in a care home. So it's yeah, very much for the early stages of the disease. You can take it for as long as is needed. We in the US, we have now got a new indication for the drug, which is a maintenance indication. So what this means is that after 18 months on the drug, which is usually the time by which all these plaques have been dissolved, by the way, then you can drop down to only having the drug once a month. Okay. Now, what we do know is that when you stop taking the drug, you do start to reaccumulate these plaques. And it goes back to the point I made before, but nobody really knows what causes them, but they do, they will come back. Oh. So, but we have got this new indication in the US market where you can step back from twice a month to once a month, which of course is a good thing because it's easier then for the patient, the carer, and less burden on the healthcare system.
So with that in mind, is it a prophylactic then? You know, if this problem is in our family, should we all start having a dose of this age 60 or something?
I couldn't say. I wouldn't be allowed to say that, but no, probably not. I think, you know, what you might have to understand is that before you can receive the drug, there's quite a rigorous process to identify whether you're an appropriate eligible patient. So you have to have either a PET scan on your brain to see if the plaques are present, or you have to have a lumbar puncture, you know, a CSF, which can also determine whether you have these plaques in the brain. And if they are present, then you could be eligible for treatment.
Okay.
But at the moment, we don't know who will develop the plaques in the future if they're not present. I mean, there are in development blood biomarkers, which will be available probably in the next couple of years, where you will be able to determine whether a patient could be at risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, and potentially then you could, you know, you might be able to take it prophylactically. Yeah.
Are there any side effects that might make people not want to do that?
Yeah, there are. So when you remove the plaques, then you leave space in the brain, and that can lead to swelling. It can lead to potentially fluid in these gaps, and for a very small number of people it can lead to small hemorrhages, so similar to a stroke, which is why we have such a rigid process and a safety regime which we've developed with the regulatory body to make sure that if any of this side effect it developed, the patient can stop treatment straight away. And by the way, when you stop treatment, the side effect will normally disappear.
Yeah. The first side effect you mentioned, you call it gaps in the brain. What does that cause?
Well, when you dissolve, because obviously these plaques have taken up space in the brain, so when you dissolve them, it leaves a space, right?
Yeah.
So with this space, as I said, you can have fluid develop in the brain, and in some rare instances you can have a hemorrhage, so like a stroke, for example. So
So the fluid in the brain causes the hemorrhage, does it?
I mean, so what we do is every patient must have regular MRI scans when they've started treatment, three after they've started treatment, to check that they don't develop this. So this is called ARIA. It's got a name, this side effect, it's called ARIA. And so patients must go through a series of MRI scans over 12 months to make sure that they don't develop this side effect.
Okay.
So,
in your trial, how common was it?
So about 23%, 29% of patients did develop this in various forms, but only 1% was it a serious side effect.
Right. Okay. So anyway, it's something that has to be monitored carefully.
Yeah. But I stress that most of the side effect was very mild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, pretty much all drugs have side effects. So,
Yeah, and particularly ones on the brain. But, patients are made fully aware of this, and it's their decision whether to go ahead with treatment. And I think our point is, but it should be a patient's choice. They should have the choice. Otherwise, if it's not reimbursed, they have no choice, right? So.
Goodness me. All right. So we've been through all sorts of things. One thing that we haven't touched on, which might actually be commercially sensitive, you might not be able to answer, but I was going to say, if this gets through NICE and all the rest of it, how much is it likely to cost per patient?
Well, so the price that we ultimately agree with NICE to make the drug cost effective is commercially confidential.
Okay. So
I could give you, so I can tell you what the, if you like, the list price of the drug is. So, but that doesn't really necessarily bear a relation to the price that we offer to the NHS.
Okay, all right. That's fine. Maybe it's best to park that to one side because you're still talking. Now, I know there are quite a few listeners to this show. I don't know if any are on the board or working with NICE. So you'll have to continue your discussions with them. But so the people that listen to this show really are just people that are interested in health. Yeah. Some of them might be in a situation where they have loved ones or relatives, family members that are suffering from Alzheimer's, or people are just interested. Either way, if what we said does interest people, they go, oh, goodness, I'd like to find out a bit more about Alzheimer's in general, or this drug specifically. What good resources can you suggest?
So, first of all, there's a huge amount of information on Alzheimer's disease on the internet. You can easily look that up. The specialist...
The internet can be a dangerous thing. I think I really meant reliable sources.
Yeah, well, okay. So my recommendation would be contact the Alzheimer's Society, which is a big and major patient group that supports patients with Alzheimer's disease. They've got huge amounts of information on this. So my recommendation would be to contact the Alzheimer's Society to get information from them.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much indeed for taking some time to chat about this. It is important, and people are interested, stroke worried, I think. So, it's good to let people know what's going on. I hope this chat has, to some extent, your objectives have been met. I don't know what they were, letting people know what you're up to, I suppose.
I think, there has been a lot of stigma with dementia and Alzheimer's disease in the past. I'm rather hoping that, as people become more aware of the disease, and that there's hope, because what these new medicines do is they give patients hope. In the past, there was no hope with this disease. My father died of Alzheimer's, and I remember when he was given his diagnosis. And I said to him, well, why don't we try the symptomatic treatments I mentioned earlier, dinoprazole? And he said, what's the point? Doesn't do anything, you know. And he gave up. And that was tragic. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe through these shows like yours, that people's understanding is greater. They understand now that there is hope. And if they're concerned, they'll go and seek, you know, medical help. And if we can get access for this drug and the other one, then they'll have something that they can start to, you know, improve their lives.
Good. Vic, thank you very much indeed for chatting. I think that's a good point to bring things to a conclusion. So many thanks.
Thank you very much to my guest, Nick Burgin, President of ASI Europe, to talk about a drug to potentially help with Alzheimer's. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.